Welcome to the Riding from the Inside Out, Empowering Our Horse Girl Selves podcast. I'm your host, Michelle Waldo. In this podcast, I talk about how I became a horse girl as a child and why I've returned to being a horse girl as an adult. I discuss what I've learned about why many of us are horse girls, what that inexplicable heart and soul-based force is that draws us to horses like moths to a flame, how I've learned that our relationships with horses can be an opportunity for us as horse girls to empower ourselves at our deepest inner self levels, and how by doing so, we can feel more empowered in all aspects of our lives, including in our riding and our relationships with horses. In this show, I'll share personal stories of my journey to date and how I continue to practice doing this day to day in my relationship with my current horses. I'll also periodically interview other women about how they're empowering themselves as horse girls as well. So join me as we go on this journey of empowering our horse girl selves together. Welcome back to the Riding from the Inside Out podcast. In today's episode, I'm talking about how our journey with a dominant seeming horse may not feel like rainbows and flowers, but here's what it can become. And that's what it can become, what that journey can become, is what I'm going to be talking about today. When this topic came to me, it came to me after feeding my horses this morning and dealing with my guy, my now 8-year-old off-track thoroughbred, because he just turned 8, which is amazing because I've had him since he was 6, and I can't believe he's 8 already. Dealing with him this morning and having this awareness come to me. Now, this is not a new awareness. This is something that I've been having come to me through my whole ownership of him and other horses. But I was reminded of it this morning. And so I realized, though, that it... How do I put this? If you are listening to this and you kind of subscribe to a very, you know, the horse is always right, natural horsemanship path, you may or may not agree with some of what I'm going to say. And yet, if you've listened to my other episodes, you may have been a more traditional, classic kind of horsemanship person, and you may have been like, this stuff's way too woo-woo and airy-fairy. And, oh yeah, well, such is the path of when you tune into yourself and you listen to yourself, because what I have found is that the more that I tune into myself and listen to myself about what is right for me, and I tune into my horse and I listen to my horse about what is right for them, we don't fit into boxes. We don't fit into a box or a set system or an exact prescribed thing. We're unique. We are all different. And this is why I think it's really important, you know, for me, at least, I've learned that any time in any aspect of my life, when I've gone down a path of thinking, oh, this is it, This is the system. This is the training approach. This is the perspective. This is the view. This is the idea. This is the teacher. This is the coach. This is the, you know, expert. This is the fill in the blank person that has the answers, or system that has the answers. I have always, always come to see that while they may be part of my journey and very valuable parts of my journey, I just really have found that it's the idea of a system or a thing being all set that fits everyone just is never true. It's what we kind of always want. Who doesn't want a book or a system or a step-by-step thing that we can just do this and figure it all out? Who doesn't want that? You know, that kind of seems like it would be easier to just kind of follow things. But I find that that's not the way life works. And I find that every time I subscribe to a system that seems to be, you know, have all the answers, I find that there are other answers. And this is what I mean by learning to listen to yourself. Because when you learn to listen to yourself and you learn to listen to your horse, what I find is that in that process, you don't need to buy into one set system. You can listen to yourself and your deepest knowing, and that of your horse, and that can call you to various answers or solutions from various people or from various systems or from various trainers or from various other horse people that can be a part of the solution that's right for you at that moment. But the idea of it all being laid out and all being perfect and all being set, I find has never been my truth and has never worked for me. So with all that said, because that in and of itself is a huge discussion, I am sharing what I'm sharing based on my experiences with horses that have been, or ponies, that have had a more dominant type of personality, and what that has meant about my journey with them. And getting to a place of partnership with them. And I'm going to share what I've experienced and what I've learned and what's worked for me. And if it doesn't resonate with you or you don't agree, no problem. Find what works for you. I'm offering this as a story and experiences of what I've experienced, and also with the deep caveat that you need to find what's right for you. Because I don't think that there is ever any one system or one thing, as much as we may want it to be, especially if we benefit from selling that system to somebody else as part of our livelihood, we, you know, often want that system to be all the answers, but it may not be. And the more flexible that we can become in that, I find that it serves us more. So let's dive into this. Getting back to this, what I call the topic of the journey of partnering with a dominant horse may not be all flowers and rainbows. So let's talk about my current horse, 8 years old, off track thoroughbred. Turns out he can be a very dominant horse. Didn't know that when I bought him, but that's what I've discovered. Did anyone tell me that? No. I have started, you know, I became aware of that by observing him. And, you know, I can already hear people who are listening to this that are of the camp of, well, there is no dominant horse because that's been debunked, or this, that, or the other, whatever, enter whatever your explanation is. And it's always because there's something, you know, they're in pain or something. Well, yeah, something is part of what I'm going to be talking about. So absolutely, if you are having a horse that is not, you know, responding, first of all, becoming aware of yourself is so key. And that's part of what we're going to be talking about today. But also, if a horse is, you know, showing behavior like it is going against what you're asking it to do, this gets into a very complicated conversation, because it may be what you're asking it to do is actually not really allowing, you know, any of its own freedom or energy. So like maybe you're, you know, really asking your horse to hold a frame and it can't do it. It physically can't do it. It does not have the muscle strength or the power. And you might be thinking, well, it's not doing it because it's being dominant or it's becoming pushy or whatever. And it may be because it literally can't do it physically, because of its physical level of, you know, where it's at. So that can be the case, you know. So if you have a horse that is exhibiting any signs of anything, you know, tune in to their health. Tune into what could be going on. Tune into what might be causing certain responses in them that you perceive as, you know, not doing what you want them to do, or you perceive as dominant or you know, non-compliant or whatever. But also know that horses that are non-compliant often are because of what is the perspective that you are holding in which they need to be compliant versus in true partnership. So, you know, this episode could be like 100 episodes right there based on that. But let's say, for example, you have a horse that is exhibiting dominant behaviors and you're not asking the horse to really do anything. You know, you're not using any kind of, you know, martingales or restrictive things or strong bits or demanding that they do something that maybe is physically hurting them or is unnatural for them or is something they're unable to do. What about that? What about when you have that horse? That's what I'm talking about. Okay. So, and it can be really easy to put a lot of horses in that camp that aren't really in that camp, because what it is they have some kind of pain or they have an ulcer or they have, you know, something neurologically going on with them or, you know, whatever that is creating what you perceive of as them not being in agreement with you or whatever. But what about if a horse is just being aggressive or dominant without any of that? Well, I mean, you could look at food, you know, if you're not asking them to do anything, it could be just literally biologically, you know, maybe there's something in their food or lack thereof nutritionally that can be causing a behavior. Or maybe they're experiencing some kind of pain or situation that you just don't see. Maybe something's going on with their hooves or whatever. And these are all such important things to look at. And let the awareness of what you're perceiving as quote unquote a problem with them or dominance or bullying or whatever word you're going to use as a gateway to begin wondering and questioning, why is this happening? And begin looking for answers. Looking for answers, which begins from a place of tuning into yourself in the way that you are open to other explanations that might be causing the situation that you're experiencing and you're perceiving in this way. So that's a really important thing to do. But the other thing I want to talk about is when it's not that. And when it's not that, and it really is about it being a learned behavior by the horse that is going into practice because of their, in a lot of cases, their response to you, but you don't really know that in the beginning. So let me back up with a story, because stories I find are always so much easier to illustrate something than just, you know, concepts. So if you've listened to this podcast, you've heard me talk about, you know, how I started riding and all of that. And then I had this pony and I was really scared of this pony named Spooker. She bucked me off and then we ended up selling her. But I then was ponyless and I was heartbroken. And then I, you know, kind of discovered there was this pony at the barn who was, as equally as quote unquote difficult as the pony that I sold, that I had owned. But he was kind of like my last chance pony. Like it was either, him or nothing. Because my family couldn't afford to buy me a pony that was different or a horse that was different. So I was either going to wait a really long time, which I couldn't stomach, or have nothing at all, or figure things out, which is the latter is what I ended up doing. So with that pony paint, and I've talked a lot about this, I've talked about kind of tuning into myself to be able to listen to him. But it was also a listening to me to be able to get to a place of kind of centeredness, if you will, of this listening place of, just becoming aware, a place of becoming aware of him and what was going on with him, but also me and what was going on with me, right? When we talk about a partnership, partner means two. Partner doesn't mean one. Partner means two. And when you truly partner, the idea is that you are both important and you are both equal. That is what a true partnership is, at least the way I describe it. A true partnership is where there is empowerment of the horse or pony and listening to it, And there is empowerment of the person, the rider, the handler, whatever, and true empowerment of them. So on the pony or horse side, what I find is that the pathway to true connection and partnership comes from being willing to look at the horse kind of with a fresh perspective, with an open mind, or, you know, look at the pony. And this is where it's like, just, it can be really important to see what is it that they are doing. And then, you know, is this working for you? And if it's not, stopping and becoming open to what it might be showing you, what it might be telling you. And that's kind of what I was talking about earlier. Like, it could be that your horse's behavior or your pony's behavior that you don't like is telling you something that you are calling yourself and your horse is calling you to become aware of. Like, maybe they have a bit that is not working for them. Maybe they have ulcers. Maybe they have a problem with their feet. Maybe the nature of what you're doing with them and expecting them to do is not something they physically can do, or perhaps something that they just don't want to be doing, you know, and it's just not kind of right for them. When we listen to our horses by seeing what is presenting, and then we open ourselves up to see what might this be, it's almost like opening ourselves up. I almost like kind of imagine like a blank sheet of paper where I'm or an empty mailbox where I'm like, okay, I have no set prescribed, you know, answers or notions. I'm just open to exploring that there could be something going on that is not just what it looks like or what it feels like in the moment. And so this is really important. This is, to me, the process of doing this is about tuning into ourselves to be able to have the strength to do that, to listen in a way to the horse's actions or response or lack thereof, to be able to see what is being, you know, possibly communicated to you. Now, I've had this happen with horse after horse after horse. I've had this happen with all many aspects of my life, with lots of things, lots of animals, my kids, relationships, experiences, whatever. When I have allowed myself to see what I perceive as something I don't like, or that doesn't feel good to me, when I allow myself to see it and kind of step back and become open to the idea that maybe it's showing me something, you know, that thing is trying to show me, like maybe one of my kids is trying to help me become aware of, or in the case of a horse is trying to kind of like illustrate to us. When we become open to that, that can lead us on a path to being able to not try to prescribe set solutions for our horse or pony that we started off with, but kind of like going down a path of exploration to other answers. So you may have a horse that is, you know, stopping at fences or is, you know, exhibiting some kind of unwanted, quote unquote, unwanted behavior. And instead of just saying, this is, you know, this happening, being open to becoming aware that maybe it's not what it seems. Maybe it's not quite what it appears to be. And that can put you on the path of maybe realizing, you know, there's a medical issue or a, there's like a soundness issue or a feeding issue or who knows? I mean, the list could go on and on and on. It depends. But when a horse is exhibiting a behavior and you feel like you have gone down that road with them, and the horse is exhibiting a dominant aggressive behavior, what I have found is that that is asking me to tune into me about me and what I am feeling and being and doing with my own power around the horse. So, like, getting back to the story of the pony, when I had that pony paint, you know, I don't know what happened to him before I started riding him, but when I started riding him, I was like, oh, great, here's this pony I can ride. Except for he would rear up, he would, you know, turn around and race back to the barn with me on him. And there wasn't anything I could do to stop him. You know, he would try all kinds of things and do all kinds of things. And really it was like, what had happened? At first, you know, it was really scary because it was like, oh my gosh, here's this pony. What, he's no better than the one that I just sold. What am I going to do? Well, in this case, I couldn't just throw in the towel. I couldn't just, I mean, I could, but then I would be ponyless again and I couldn't stomach that. So I had to go beyond what seemed like the obvious answer, which was fix him, which I didn't know how to do, or get away from riding him, which I couldn't stomach. So there had to be something else in between. So it's like what I started to understand was that that experience was calling me to embrace more of my own knowing and power to be able to partner with him. So part of the issue with him was that he had learned through whoever had ridden him, I don't know, whatever they had done, he had learned that he could do certain things and then win, like he could kind of dominate. And so he could rear up and that would make someone afraid and they would get off of him, or he could, you know, race back to the barn and that would make someone afraid and they could get off of him. So if that was scaring me, which it was, what was it that I needed to do if I couldn't just quit him? Well, I had to tune into myself and start becoming aware of how to hold my own power and energy in relationship to him in a way that I hadn't known how to do up to that point. Why hadn't I known how to do that up to that point? Because the horses and ponies that I had ridden, well, ponies, I guess, aside from my sister's horse on occasion, up to that point had been, you know, pretty, aside from the one that I sold because I couldn't, the one that I bought and then sold because I couldn't handle her, prior to that, they had been, you know, trained and they had a certain, you know, agreeableness, a certain willingness to go along with whatever I was asking them to do. And so it was fine. I didn't need to be anything different. I could just ride and be okay. You know, I could just ask them to trot or ask them to walk or go out on the trail or whatever. And then like they would comply and, you know, it was all fine. And that's how I learned to ride. And that's what I experienced. And then I get Spooker, who was, you know, not, first of all, not trained really. She was, I think she was younger. So she wasn't very well trained. And then she also, you know, had a combination of green, not trained, and bad habits. God knows what her story was. And so, you know, put me, an inexperienced, you know, even though I'd been riding other ponies and horses for a while, inexperienced with that kind of horse or that kind of pony on her. And within seconds, you know, I was like, whoa, I was scared. And she knew it. You know, she knew what she could do because she could sense my energy. You know, so she had gotten used to knowing that she could be dominant and that that would get her to get out of whatever it is she was wanting to do. So the same thing with Paint, only he had been, the other pony that I then started with, only he had been trained. He had been ridden. He wasn't green at all, but, he had developed these very, very bad habits, you know, where he was just being a pony. He was like, well, wait a minute. Whoa. I don't have to do all this stuff. I don't have to do anything if I don't want to do it. I just do this certain stuff. And then whoever's on me will get scared and then I don't have to do it anymore. Simple. So that's what he would do. And that's what he did with me. And I, coming off of, you know, my experience with Spooker and having no experience with ponies or horses like that, I was like, crap, what am I going to do here? But I had no choice. I either was going to be ponyless and horseless, or I was going to figure this out. So what did that mean? Does it mean I had to, like, you know, dominate him into submission? No. Did it mean I could send him off to some trainer that would train him into, you know, habituating him to just whatever? No. I actually blessed that pony. You know, he is one that had such a spirit, you know, such a spirit of his own energy, really, that a lot of horses, you know, I see these days, you know, don't. I mean, some horses, they're just the things that we ask them to do with them having no choice. So many of them, they just give in and they go along with it and they don't get heard at all. And they just shut down, you know, and then they just listen. And I didn't want to do that to a pony or a horse. I didn't have a drive for ribbons or an objective or anything like that. I had a drive for having an experience with a pony and just having fun with that pony and being okay with that pony. but I wanted it also to be safe. You know, I didn't want to fear for my life. So that was kind of like the spirit and the energy of how I was working with this pony paint. And with this pony paint, what I had to learn to do was I had to learn to find the power and my own personal power within myself to be able to be in partnership with him. He was not going to respect me unless I respected myself. And it wasn't that he was going to respect me if I dominated him, because that wasn't what I was asking him to do. And that's not what I'm talking about doing. You know, there are people that are like that. Like, I'm going to train this horse to respect me. I'm going to bend their will to comply to get them. I'm going to bend their will to comply to become subservient to me. That's not what I was doing. It's not what I ever want to be doing. Anytime that I become aware that I'm doing that in my life, I feel like that is calling me to realize there's some place in me that is acting from that place of a need to dominate something else in order for me to feel safe. So if I am in a place of feeling like I've got to get a horse to, you know, or an animal, I've got to dominate them in order for them to listen to me so that I'm safe, something's wrong. Something's mixed up in this equation. I'm misunderstanding what's going on with them, or I'm misunderstanding something about myself, and that is calling me to tune into myself. And what is it that I'm feeling when I am feeling this, you know, kind of threat or fear, if you will? And you know, this is my point with paint. It's like, that's kind of what I had to do. Like, I had to learn how to tune in to myself and begin asking myself a lot of questions to begin to kind of see the truth of the answers that were in me that would allow me to kind of create a clarity within myself that would then allow me to come forward in partnership with paint, kind of like in the kind of partnership that is the only one that he would allow. So it's almost like I had to learn how to listen to myself and be willing to rise up in my own truth and power and let go of things that I believed about myself that actually were not true, that I had been practicing, to come into my true power and awareness, not to dominate paint or any horse, but to learn how to hold a respect for myself and hold my own power, which is then that which paint would also respect. Because when we hold our own power, when we learn to value ourselves and listen to ourselves and hold our own power and truth, we actually, it's this kind of crazy thing. It's not really crazy at all, but it can seem like this until you understand it more, where the more power and truth and knowing we have within ourselves, the less we need to control anyone or anything outside of us. We can allow them to be as they are, and we can be open to seeing what it is they are trying to communicate with us. And in doing so, we actually are practicing a true partnership. A true partnership that is kind of more one based on what I would say like is as unconditional love and unconditional acceptance. And what that means, it's tricky though, because unconditional love and acceptance does not come for another, does not come by giving all of your acceptance to someone else without finding your own power within yourself first. It's a misconception that we've been taught, like, oh, well, you know, be giving to everybody else and be generous. Give it out. But if you give out without respecting yourself and finding your own kind of connection and a power and flowing within yourself, it's not going to serve you. And it's the same with your horse. So your horse or your pony. So like, for example, if I had practiced just kind of like this, let's call it just flowers and rainbows, kind of like a flowers and rainbows style of acceptance with paint back in those days, like, oh, paint, I love you. And I just honor you. And I see you. And, you know, I see that you may or may not want to do these things. And, you know, I honor you and I give you respect for your choices. If I did that and I gave him that, but I didn't give it to myself first, I didn't respect my own, you know, my own body, my own safety, my own existence, my own, you know, freedom. That is an act of submission to a horse or a pony, and they will not respect you for it because you're not respecting yourself, is kind of a simple way of looking at it. You have to start with yourself from within. So for me, I had to start with paint, how to find my own power, courage, belief in myself, and hold that up and practice it, even if I hadn't known how to do it, or I had lots of like thoughts in my head circling around, why I couldn't do it. I had to kind of keep taking steps to start to do that. And in doing that, then I became the kind of partner or potential partner that could partner with Paint. Paint was not going to partner with me if I presented myself as kind of subservient to him. He also wasn't going to partner with me if I presented myself as dominant to him. I needed to find my own power in myself. And in finding my own power in myself, then from that place, coming forward in connection and openness with him and seeing his power and his energy and what he was trying to show me. And then the dance of the two of us is what created that amazing partnership that we went on to have. The longer that I just, if I tried to just kind of like be all flowery and rainbows with Paint, of just being like, oh, you're a sweet boy. I'm just seeing you as your true sweet soul and whatever. And, you're just a misunderstood pony, that is rearing and taking me, back to the barn. I'm just going to understand you, that wasn't enough for him. It could be with other horses, with other ponies, but it wasn't enough for him. What I needed to do with him was I needed to find my own power in myself, my own inner strength and belief in myself for him to want to see me as someone that he could partner with. Now, a lot of times people may talk about this in the horse world as like, you need to be their leader. And if you're their leader, then they will comply because of, herd dynamics or whatever. And it depends on what school of thought you're coming from. But it's this idea that if you're the leader, then they will be the follower. And if you show that you're the leader, and you're in charge, even if it's not in like a threatening way, then you're the leader and then they will respect you and follow you. Well, kind of. I feel like there are so many nuances to that, because what I find is that I don't want, in the truest partnership with a horse or a pony, I don't want them to blindly follow me because I am perceived as the leader, even if I'm a benevolent leader. That can take you to certain places, that can be a much more enjoyable experience for a horse if you are a benevolent leader. They can have fun and you can have fun and all of that. But that's not what I have learned is the deeper type of partnership that you can actually have. To me, the deeper type of partnership that you can actually have goes beyond that. And I talked about that in episode 13, or at least, you know, talked about it at a preliminary level. The deeper partnership can come when we're both equal. And yet we have a mutual respect for each other that is based on trust and is based on connection. And that kind of partnership is one that I feel like goes well beyond the one of, you know, a benevolent leader of your horse. You know, where, you know, you're being the leader, you're not making them, you're listening to them, but you're not making them do these like awful things, but still you are the leader. And the idea is that you lead and they follow. Well, that can work. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about something different. I'm talking about where you do the work within yourself of your own leadership within you that gives you the power of yourself and your knowing and your freedom of yourself, that you don't need anyone or anything, including an animal, to be a certain way. And you partner with an animal like a horse, like your horse, to allow their spirit and strength and their leadership to come in an equal, respectful, mutual partnership, tied partnership. And you each can create that kind of a foundation of respect. That to me is what I'm seeking to do. I don't always get there, and I'm still learning how to do it, because the thing is that we're always kind of, you know, we can always kind of get caught up in old things that we've been taught that, you know, we kind of can wake up to about what, how we can truly be empowered from within ourselves. And so, you know, I can be asking my horse to forgive me for those moments. But the idea that even for just a short period of time, that I could be in true partnership with my horse in the way that I'm talking about, in this deeper way beyond just being their leader, is an amazing thing. And why is that? Why is it to me better to partner in that way than just as a benevolent leader? Well, because I honor what the horse knows that I don't. I honor them and their spirit and their knowing and their soul and even what they are as a horse. So for example, like one of the things that people say when they talk about like being a, you know, being the leader for your horse, you know, and then your horse goes out. I was listening to a very talented, you know, cowboy type trainer talking about this. With a challenging horse, and you know, it all made a lot of sense. And he was very open to the horse. He was very he was practicing very much this benevolent leadership approach, which, you know, is way better than a dominant leadership approach, you know, or not anywhere tuning into your horse approach, not listening to what your horse might be trying to tell you approach, all of that. But the thing about it is, his argument was, well, when you take that horse somewhere else, when you take him to a show or you take him into a trail or you take him out into unfamiliar area, he will then look to you. He will then look to you to be his leader. Well, yeah, that's great. That's cool. I mean, that's good. That's definitely safer than other situations. But if you are partnering with your horse in a true way where you are an equal leader to their leader, but you have a partnership, a sinking, a synergy of mutual respect. What that means for me, like in practical terms, say we're out on a trail and my human perceptions of things are different than a horse. And say that I've taught this horse that I'm the leader and I'm the one that's always gonna, you know what's right. I've told them that's what I reward, that's what they get, that's what they understand, they learn to be calm by me. Well, what if there is something like a mountain lion, you know, or a bear, you know, a dangerous bear like a grizzly bear or something like that, you know, some distance away that I don't perceive. I don't perceive it. And I've taught my horse now that because I don't perceive it, they shouldn't trust their own knowing and their own perception of it, because they should tune into me because I'm their leader, a benevolent leader, but I'm their leader. What has that done? Has that really served us? No. No. If I am working in partnership with a horse at this deeper level that I'm talking about, which, like I said, it's a work in progress. I am no expert by any stretch, but I really feel like this is a new way that we could be with all beings in the world, including our horses. That if I'm out on the trail, say, for example, and that horse perceives something, and I've not taught them to shut down their perception, even in a benevolent way, and to listen to only my perception, I've allowed them to trust their perceptions because I honor them fully, then what does that mean? It means they could alert me and us to something that is beneficial for us to become aware of. In that moment, I would trust my horse to, I would give my horse the benefit of the doubt of realizing that if there is something, because we have such a partnership, that if there is something they are reacting to and responding to that I don't perceive, that doesn't mean it's not there. And I trust that. And I trust them. And it serves both of us. So how this ties into the, you know, the journey with a dominant horse may not be all flowers and rainbows, because I realize I kind of diverged from that a bit, is that what I mean by that is that I feel like there's this, it's like everybody wants to like fall in one camp or the other camp. And it's like either you're in classical horsemanship or you're in a more natural horsemanship. And there's this kind of view that in the more natural horsemanship world, you know, the horse has all the answers and it's our job to just listen to all the answers and let the horse tell us. Well, if you're doing that, you're kind of looking for all the flowers and rainbows. And that may work with some horses. But what about when you have a horse that is not, you tune into them, you listen to them, but they have their own ideas. They have their own spirit. And to be honest, I've come to realize that even though those horses are more quote unquote challenging, the joy of partnering with a horse that truly has and has not given up its own spirit and yet is willing to partner with you and respect your own true power and spirit. Ugh, there's something about it. There's something about it. It is amazing. Now, I have that journey going on with my youngest horse because he fits this camp. And it is an ongoing process of learning to listen to him, but also learning to listen to myself and empowering myself to be able to, you know, even if just at moments, create this kind of partnership that I'm talking about, where it's truly honoring him and I'm truly honoring myself and requiring him to honor me as well. Because if I don't honor me, he's not going to honor me. Or if I'm just not even aware of any of it, he's not going to honor me either. That's just not the way he is. And it is an amazing journey, actually, to go on with him. It's not all flowers and rainbows, for sure. It's not like, oh, these wonderful moments all the time. There are wonderful moments. And there are moments where I have to really rise within myself to understand myself, to embrace more of my own personal power, to find my own true knowing and spirit, to be able to be the person that can step up to the plate and be able to partner with him, not have him dominate with me or dominate me or I listen to everything he says and, you know, he's like, oh, she honors all of me and I can just do whatever I want to her. No, me honoring me and me honoring him, him honoring him, and him honoring me. That is the dual partnership, this deeper partnership. And it is not always one of flowers and rainbows because it's not really the way I find that we people have been taught. And a lot of horses have been taught. And it can be challenging. And I will be talking more about this in this podcast as I go on, I'm sure, because I'm living this. Now, my other horse, I know this is a long episode, so I'm going to wrap this up soon. But my other horse, he's the opposite. And, you know, to be honest, so many times it's so much easier for me to work with him. He's much more tentative. He never exerts or exhibits a dominant type of behavior towards anything. If anything, he's recessive. He's more pull away. So with my energy with him, what I have to do, and this is something I learned to do a lot of, I think probably how I learned when I first started riding those first ponies before paint, was how to just be you know, soft and connecting and not having a certain like dominance or objective. And then that creates a connection of trust with us. And then he trusts me and we, you know, we work well. And it's really actually really nice to interact with him, because, you know, I don't know. I don't have to do as much personal work with myself to be able to do that. Maybe because I've just had much more experience with those types of animals. I don't know. But you know, it's nice to have both horses that I can practice with. But this is what I wanted to talk about today. I wanted to talk about, you know, how the journey of partnering, and I mean true partnering, the way I'm describing it, which is not being a benevolent leader and calling that partnership. I'm talking about the kind of partnership that I really am seeking with my horses is in allowing all of them to be, and in allowing all of their true versions of themselves to be, you know, what they really are at a soul level, and all of me and what I truly am at a soul level to work in conjunction with each other. And in that mutual alignment of partnership, that is what I find is, it's amazing. It's an amazing, amazing experience, even just to have it for 30 seconds, 60 seconds, you know. It's amazing. And to have it beyond that, you know, and to have it for a while is phenomenal. But really, I find that the path to that is one that is an inner journey within myself. It is an inner practice. That's why this podcast is called Riding from the Inside Out. But you could easily swap the word riding with just interacting with your horse from the inside out, because it's not just about riding. I actually hardly do any riding these days. And maybe that'll change. But it is about from the inside out. Because what I've come to understand is that it is when we tune into our own selves and we start questioning things and being open and listening and becoming aware in these new ways that we have these opportunities to do a partnership with a horse that goes beyond it's an allowing of two free, fully engaged beings to work in conjunction with each other based on choice and desire for that connection. And it's a beautiful thing. So that's what I wanted to talk about today, and I will leave it at that until the next episode. I'm so glad that you tuned into today's episode of the Riding from the Inside Out podcast. You also can now find me on Substack, where I'm sharing all of the Riding from the Inside Out podcast episodes that you can listen to on that platform or get emails to not miss any episodes, but you can also see videos of me with my horses, riding, additional audio recordings, and other things that dive further into this way of connecting with our horses and ourselves in deeper ways. You can find me there at ridingfromtheinsideout.substack.com. You can also see some of my other offerings on my website at michellewaldo.com.